Samuel chapter 17, I titled this, God Actually Does Things. I know it's profound, I know. 1 Samuel chapter 17. I was reading this record this week and just occurred to me, and I thought I would take a quick look at it. 1 Samuel, this is when David is brought to Saul because he had made some comments about what Goliath was doing to them. And so they bring David over to Saul. We'll just pick up the record in verse 32. It says, "And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistine." And we know that in the case, the others in Israel were failing. Their hearts were failing. They didn't want to have anything to do with this Philistine. But David said, "I will go and fight." And Saul said, "David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." You're young, and he's been fighting since you were a baby, so that's not such a good idea. "And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." You know, here David said, "I killed the bear, I killed the lion." And later in verse 37, it says that it was God who delivered him out of the bear and lion. Just keep that in your mind a second. Verse 38, "And Saul armed David with his armor and put in a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail." You'll notice here throughout this whole thing, Saul is saying, you know, this guy's too big, you're too small. He's pointing out the obvious physical things that are going on. David, as you'll notice, as we looked at before, mate, is that he's pointing out to Saul, God. He's saying, God delivered me. And so forth. And down in verse 39, "And David girded the sword upon his armor, and he said to go, for he had not proved it. And he said, I cannot go with these, said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his staff, and he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and a ruddy, and of a fair countenance. The Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with the staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods," plural. "And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field." Both Saul and Goliath, purely looking at the situation from a five senses point of view, it's kind of clear. You know, Saul's already summed it up. Goliath has summed it up. You know, and if you were a five senses betting man, you would bet on Goliath, right? Then David said, verse 45, David said to the Philistine, "That thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defiled. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Clearly a different point of view. "And this assembly shall know," and this is when I was reading this verse, I thought about this, "and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear." And that was the phrase that kind of stuck out to me when David says this: the Lord saveth not with sword and spear. And I thought, what does that mean? For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. See, the whole thing is that we can continually limit God to our own understanding of situations. And it's something we do all the time. We just saw it here. Saw that, okay, well, you're kind of small, he's big, you haven't fought before, what's the point? And Goliath's like, what? You're coming at me with a piece of, you know, what am I? See, and that's the constant take of people, and us included sometimes. Well, all I've got is a sword and a spear. How can I deal with this particular situation? And David said, Lord is not limited. Or he said, doesn't say, that's not his way. God actually does things. He's, you know, you might limit him to what you can do, what your ability is. And David's saying, no, that's not his realm of operation. His realm of operation isn't limited to what we can do. He doesn't save with sword and spear. That's why many times we can be dejected in life, because all we're seeing is the things we understand, the solutions that we know are possible to situations. And David, you know, and he, you know, yeah, we have to believe God, and David did believe God, there's no question. But his heart was like, okay, I don't, he probably didn't particularly know how this was going to happen. But he goes, I know that, you know, he saved me from the lion, the bear. And, you know, and this guy is fighting against our God. You know, what's wrong with you guys? Surely, he's not limited to sword and spear. For the Lord, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Judges chapter 6. Judges chapter 6. God is actually involved in the affairs of his people. Judges chapter 6, verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was, when Israel had sown, that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites, and the children of the east, and even they came up against them, and they camped against them, and destroyed the increase of the earth, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep, nor ox, nor ass. This is a pretty bad situation. For they came up with their tent, their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for a multitude. For both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. Judges chapter 7. So pretty dire situation. Chapter 7, verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, who was Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, who at the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. The Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. You know, God's point in this whole record, and you'll see it, his whole point, I'm not going to do the whole record, just a few verses, but what did he say? He said, I don't want you to learn how to trust yourselves even more than you already do. That's my paraphrase of him saying, I don't want them to think that they saved themselves. It's like David. He said, he's not limited to sword and spear. The battle is the Lord's. And here, God says to Gideon, you know, I don't want to see. I don't want them to understand. And again, you can. There are numerous records like this in the Bible. But verse 3, now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return, depart early from Mount Gilead. And the return of the people, 22,000, there remained 10,000. You know, the very fact that the Midianites were without number, the fact that we're getting numbers here, shows you the imbalance here. There's no number mentioned, and here it's like 10,000. Lord said unto Gideon, not yet too many. People are yet too many. Bring them down onto the water, and I will try them for thee there. Verse 4, and it shall be that of whom I will say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, Every man, everyone that lappeth of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down unto his knees to drink. The number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, By the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go every man unto his place. So, you know, it's this situation is really no different than David and Goliath. It is as we like to coin the phrase, it is a David and Goliath situation, isn't it? Here's 300 people, and he said, I'm going to save you by them. So it would be very clear to the Israelites that God doesn't save by sword and spear, because there's no way, under any circumstances, 300 people are going to destroy those without number. It's not possible. Unless God actually does things in the affairs of men, that he actually gets involved, and he doesn't leave us to our own devices, thank God. You know, he actually gets involved. Verse 16, the same chapter. And he divided the 300 men unto three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand, with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, Look on me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall you do. And when I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and all the 100 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers that were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands, the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood every one man in his place round about the camp, and all the hosts ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. Who did that? Even throughout all the host, and the host fled to Bethshittah and Zereth and to the border of Abel Meholah and Tabith. You know, so again, God doesn't save with sword and spear. There's no one alive who would have gotten a war council together and said, you know what we ought to do? We ought to just light some pitchers and break some stuff and blow some trumpets. And you would have been laughed out of that assembly in a second. But see, God is not limited to these things. I mean, you know, the more we understand the sovereignty of God, the power of God, the almightiness of God in our day-by-day lives, what a blessing to know that He's our Father. This is the same God. He's our Father. Why would we limit him to our own ability and understanding of situations? In Numbers chapter 16. Numbers chapter 16. I was, many believe in the world that we are on our own, and that God is just a concept that man has developed. Karl Marx wrote, My object in life is to dethrone God. For him, God was an illusion. Right? And that is prevalent thinking, as we know, in many walks of life. See, and that particular thinking can impact our thinking, because we can try to calculate or devise or legislate or come up with solutions to situations. Could you have legislated your way out of the David and Goliath situation, the Gideon situation? No, God was involved. God was actually involved in the affairs of men. He was doing something. God actually does things. When someone comes to you in the street and says, you know, you teach them, you witness somebody and say, you know, tell them about God, and they go, oh yeah, you know that. That works for you. That's kind of good for you. That's their way of saying it is just a mental concept, because if they really believed it was real, they would believe you. But they don't. They've fallen prey to Marxist, communist, whatever thinking you want to think about, that there is no God. It's just an illusion made from the mind of man. Otherwise, why wouldn't they say, oh, really? You believe in a God that heals the sick and raises the dead and Jesus Christ coming back? They'd believe you in an instant, wouldn't they? But you see, their thinking has fallen. Anyone, someone tells you, oh, that's good for you, they don't believe a word you are saying. Because they actually believed you, they would believe you. That's deep, eh? Numbers chapter 16, verse 23. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. You guys know this record. When these guys had said, you know, Moses and you guys are just too proud. You guys have too much responsibility. The entire congregation is holy. So why are you guys taking the lead? And Moses rose up and went unto, verse 25, unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sins. So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram, on every side, and Dathan and Abiram came out, and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives, and their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, hereby ye shall know that the Lord hath sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth, and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. Not your average daily occurrence, is it? Who did all that? Who's involved in the affairs of men? God actually does things. He got involved. He had to deal. Do you think the ground just opened of its own accord and these guys just went, no. God did that. The fire of God came down. See, we don't have to figure out all those situations necessarily. We don't have to be involved in all the details of situations. We just have to believe in a miracle-working God that takes care of his people, and that he is not limited to sword or spear. He's not limited to our devices, our legislations, our thinking, our solutions. He's not limited at all. Who would have thought of this situation? Who would have thought of this solution? You know, maybe you might have thought, you know, let's talk to Dathan and Korah, we'll convince them. No, God had other plans. In Judges chapter 10, sorry, Joshua chapter 10. That's why these records are here. We read them and we read these things about, no, he's not limited. Okay. God is the almighty miracle-working God, and he takes care of us. Joshua 10, verse 1. It came to pass, when Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, had heard how Joshua had taken Ai, and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and her king, so he had done to Ai and her king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel, and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city as one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than I, and all the men thereof were mighty. So they say, oh, these people are kind of scared of this God. They were a little bit worried. Wherefore this guy, Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, sent unto Hoam, king of Hebron, and unto Piram, king of Jarmuth, and unto Japhia, king of Lachish, unto Deber, king of Eglon, saying, come up unto me, and help me, that we may smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. So they're trying to up the odds on his side. That didn't work for Goliath or for the Midianites, but hey, let's try it again. Therefore, verse 5, therefore the five kings of the Amorites, because five is better than one, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and Eglon, gathered themselves together and went up, and they and all their hosts, and encamped before Gibeon and made war against it. The men of Gibeon sent unto Joshua to the camp to Gilgal, saying, slack not thy hand from thy servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites that dwell in the mountains are gathered together against us. So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of the war, people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly and went up from Gilgal all night. The Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goeth up to Bethhoron, and smote them to Azekah and unto Makeda. It came to pass, as they fled from before Israel, and were in the going down to Bethhoron, the Lord cast great stones from heaven upon them unto Azekah, and they died. God sent great stones, and we find out here it's hailstones, and they died. And there were more which died with hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword. So who was the more prominent person involved in this particular battle? Was it Joshua? They were there. They were doing what God told them to do. But God sent hailstones, huge stones from the sky that killed more people than the Israelites killed. Maybe God was involved in people's lives here. Verse 12, then spake Joshua, it gets better, to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, son, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. You know, body, heavenly bodies, just kind of, can you hang out where you are right now? You know, you read this, and the sun stood still, verse 13, and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and hasted not to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man. For the Lord fought for Israel. Just like him saying before, the battle is not yours. You know, you do what God tells you to do. Gideon did what God told him to do. David did what God told him to do. Joshua did what God told him to do. But you see, in all those situations, or Moses as well, he actually told them, just recognize that it wasn't me who came up with all of this. It was God. I've done all these things at God's command. They're just doing what God told them to do. The solutions to the very serious problems that they were facing were God's solutions. Could any of those guys have figured this stuff out? You know, it's not right, speaking physically, for the sun to not move for a while. That has an impact on a lot of things in the world. It's a good thing that the astronomers on Joshua's army weren't the guys that had to figure out how to solve that problem. God did. God works in the affairs of people. He does things. He is involved in the lives of his people. A stupid song, from a distance, God is watching. That's nonsense. That's not what the Word of God says. Closer than our very breath. God in Christ within us. Nehemiah chapter 9. Nehemiah chapter 9. You know, to think that he only has to use... Sorry, to think that man only has what he himself has to solve the problems with is really not to trust him. Because then we could just do it on our own, right? If all we're ever limited to is our own abilities and the things that we have at our disposal, that's not really to trust him. You know, all the records where you see in the Bible, there's lots of them, right? Lots of cases. You know, the sundial of Ahaz, you know, we've read that before. The case of Hezekiah, who made that to stop? Who, it was God who did that. You know, God that gives people power to get wealth. You know, They're in record after record, and the Bible talks about this. The covenant of day and night, God told Jeremiah would never cease as long as he's around. Who takes care of making sure there's a day and a night? See, he's constantly involved in the affair, in our affairs. So when we go to bed at night, we say, "Hey, God, thank you so much for the darkness. It's great. I love sleeping. It's good for me." In the morning, the sun comes up. Thank you, God, for the beautiful sun, because I know it, you know, makes things grow. And he's constantly involved in our affairs. He's the one who said it's not going to end again. He's the one who said the world will never get flooded again. It's not going to happen. And not while he's taking care of us. He's constantly involved in our day-by-day affairs. The problem is that the world always finds other ways of explaining how these things happen. Every one of those records we read, the world will explain it away somehow to take your and my confidence and trust away from the one true God. What else is the point of them saying that? It's to impact you and your trust in God. And they'll always do that. But we know what the Word of God says. We know He is a miracle-working God, and He's involved in the affairs of His people. In Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 7, "And thou art the Lord God, who didst choose Abraham and broughtest him forth out of Ur of the Chaldees, and gavest him the name of Abraham, and foundest his heart and faithful before thee, and madest a covenant with him, to give the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Jebusites, and the Girgashites, to give it, I say, to his seed, and hast performed thy words, for thou art righteous, and didst see the affliction of our fathers in Egypt, and heardst their cry by the Red Sea, and showed signs and wonders upon Pharaoh, and on all his servants, and on all the people of his land. For thou knewest that they dealt proudly against them, so thou didst thou get thee a name, as it is this day, and thou didst divide the sea before them." God did that, so that they went through the midst of the sea on the dry land, and their persecutors thou threwest into the deeps. God did that, as a stone into the mighty waters. Moreover, thou leddest them in the day by a cloudy pillar, and the night by a pillar of fire. He was a constant remembrance to them, to give them light in the way wherein they should go. Thou camest down also upon Mount Sinai. He's involved, and spakest with them from heaven, and gave them right judgments and true laws, good statutes and commandments, and madest known unto them thy holy Sabbath, and commandest them precepts, statutes, and laws by the hand of Moses thy servant, and gavest them bread from heaven for their hunger. There's an old poem that we used to say, and I'm not sure, remember that poem, "God has no hands but our hands"? That's not true. I'm sitting there thinking about God has no hands but our hands with which to feed them bread. I have a hard time explaining manna if that was the case, wouldn't you? You see, I understand the gist of that poem, that statement. It's that, God wants his people to believe and trust him, and that's true. But God is not limited to my hands to feed people bread. He's not. He's limited to his ability, and there's no limit to his ability. So if it's a nice poem, but if I limit him according to that poem, then I'm not going to be able to explain what God did in it to Israel. Every single day, bread. They didn't have to do anything except go collect it. See, God is not limited by our thinking, by what the box that we want to constantly put him in. He's not. God is God. He's sovereign. He reigns in the affairs of men. He brings princes and nations to nothing. They're nothing before him. And he's our Father. What a great joy. What a privilege. "Gave us them bread from heaven for their hunger, and brought us forth water for them out of the rock for their thirst, and promised them that they should go in to possess the land which thou hast given to them. But they and our fathers dealt proudly, and hardened their necks, and hearkened not to thy commandments, and refused to obey, neither were mindful of thy wonders that thou didst among them, but hardened their necks in their rebellion. In their rebellion appointed a captain to return to their bondage, but thou art a God ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and forsookest them not. Yea, when they had made them a molten calf, and said, This is thy God that brought thee out of Egypt, hadst wrought great provocations, yet thou in thy manifold mercies forsookest them not in the wilderness. The pillar of the cloud departed not from them by day, to lead them in the way, neither the pillar of fire by night to show them light and the way wherein they should go. Thou gavest also thy good spirit to instruct them, and withheldest not thy manna from their mouth, and gavest them water for their thirst. They had that until the day they entered the promised land. Yea, 40 years didst thou sustain them in the wilderness. They lacked nothing, their clothes waxed not old, and their feet swelled not, and so on. Luke chapter 22. Manna every single day. You have speaking in tongues every single day. Constant remembrance that God works in the affairs of his people. Anytime I have any bit of a doubt even, just speak in tongues and say, okay, pillar of fire, cloud, manna, it's right there. Closer to us, never to be taken away until the Lord comes back. Luke 22:50, remember Jesus in the garden, and one of them smote the servant of the high priest, his name is Malchus, and cut off his right ear. So this guy's ear got cut off. And Jesus answered and said, suffer ye thus far, and he touched his ear and healed him. Now you think that Jesus Christ in this situation sat down with Malchus, got the apostles together, and said, okay, let's teach this man about believing, and we're going to teach him how to receive healing, and then we're going to get him to believe to get his ear. You think that's what happened here? What happened here? Jesus healed him. Jesus Christ always did the Father's will. You know, so you think it was the Father's will to have this man's ear healed? God is involved in the affairs of people. He's not just some untouchable far. He's involved in the affairs of his people. Jesus, heal him. Okay, done. Moving on. Okay, now where were we? You know, it's almost that simple of a situation. God intervening to help his people. All those records we read, it wasn't some people got together and formed this council and try to figure out what's the best way to deal with the situation now that we had the sword, we had the spear. Over here, we got a few hundred men. Some are scared, I know. Some are idolaters, I know. But no, let's just do the best we... No, it was none of that. It was God saying, I want man to understand that I am the one who fights their battle. I'm the one who takes care of them. It's my solutions. I know what I'm doing. Just believe me. Like, you can almost hear him saying that. That's what's going on. Right, look at Mark chapter 16. Almost done here. Mark 16. Verse 19 says, so then after the Lord had spoken unto them, he was received up into heaven. So Jesus Christ, obviously, is received up and sat on the right hand of God. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them. He's not uninvolved. Now, Jesus Christ is responsible for this administration. That's what God has told him. He's confirming the word with signs following. Who do you think backs up the word? Who do you think does it? Jesus Christ has that responsibility in this administration. We are not on our own. We're not limited to our ability, to things that we can or can't do, to swords and spears that we might carry in our minds. We're not limited. What was all their people's part in all those records? And there's many of them that they read. They just trusted in God. They believed in God. David believed in God. Gideon, he was a bit afraid at first. God helped him along and taught him, you know, got him believing again, got him believing in God. Moses believed in God. Joshua, all these records, their part was just to trust this God. The solutions were well beyond their ability to figure out in all those situations. Not a one of them, right? And we'll close in Hebrews chapter 11, which... key verse regarding this, I think. Hebrews chapter 11. I will close in verse 6, which I love to read. But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is. And it really amounts to that, doesn't it? But that he that cometh to God must believe that he is. And that's really it. That he exists. That God exists. It is not something dreamt up by the mind of man, as literally hundreds of millions of people on the face of the earth would have you believe. It is not that. God, he is, and he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He exists. He is involved in our day-by-day lives. And if we ever have a reason to doubt, well, just speak in tongues, because it's your constant reminder of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ is seated at God's right hand. He's confirming the word with signs following. These are all things that day by day by day, God is involved in our lives. And if we limit him to what we understand to be swords and spears, then we will be lacking. We will be lacking our trust and confidence in him. Because the solutions are not our responsibility in many cases, in most cases. If they were, then we wouldn't need God. You know, and that's what man would have us to believe. He's just some kind of figment of man's imagination. You know, he's up there and doing stuff, and well, you know, the things that man does are way more powerful than now. We have other gods and things we can chase after and trust instead of him. We don't need him anymore. We're far more advanced now. You hear there's 1,000 excuses and facts thrown at you at ad nauseum to turn your mind and heart away from the delivering, almighty, all-powerful, one true God that had his son die for you and me. You know, so God is actually doing things. And we should never forget that, day by day by day. So there. God bless.